The new film Adam is a romantic comedy about a young couple in their 20s who meet when the woman, Beth, moves into Adam's building in New York. Pretty standard fare, right? It might be, except that the title character, Adam, has Asperger's syndrome, a high-functioning variant of autism. People with Asperger's are often exceptionally intelligent and verbally gifted, but socially awkward, since they have trouble reading emotional cues from others. Many with Asperger's have a special interest which can become an obsession. In the film, Adam's special interests are astronomy and theater history. My guest is the writer and director of Adam, Max Mayer. Mayer has spent most of his career directing theater and has written three produced plays. His only other feature film, Better Living, starred Roy Scheider and Olympia Dukakis. Adam stars Hugh Dancy, and Beth is played by Rose Byrne. In this scene from the film, Adam is meeting Beth's parents for the first time at a theater in New York. Her parents are played by Peter Gallagher and Amy Irving.
We rarely go off-Broadway. I didn't even know this theater still existed.
The Cherry Lane Theater is the oldest continuously running theater off-Broadway. It was converted from a box factory in 1924, and then in the 20s and 30s and 40s, it presented the work of writers such as F. Scott Fitzgerald with John Dos Passos, Eugene O'Neill.
And I used to bone up on conversation topics, too, when I had a date.
That's back in 1951 to 1953, Julian Beck and Judith Malina's Living Theater was based here. In 1952, Judith Malina chased a fire marshal down the street with a spear from her production of Ouboulois. Endgame by Samuel Beckett had its American premiere here in 1957, followed by other new works such as Happy Days, also by Beckett in 1962, Dutchman in 1964 by Leroy Jones, The Happy Journey to Trenton and Camden by Thornton Wilder in 1960. But that's enough about the Cherry Lane Theater.
What about the 70s?
Well, in 1971, Godspell opened.
Adam, and Daddy's joking.
Oh.
I asked Max Mayer how he imagined the mental state of someone with Asperger's to write the dialogue for Adam.
It's almost a question of bandwidth in a way. I mean, I've heard people with Asperger's describe it like that there's a... There's a sort of narrower bandwidth of stimulus that they receive in the sense that many of them are very literal in terms of and rely on the word that the other person is speaking, for instance, that rather than reading in terms of tone or inflection. I think, you know, in choosing Hugh Dancy, and also what I had said to him originally was that I don't want an introverted person to play this part, basically. I think that Adam is basically an extroverted person who has gotten a bit beaten down through experience of being inappropriate or finding out that what he's said is inappropriate or how he's behaved and that sort of thing, but is fundamentally a sort of trusting and gregarious person who is trying to connect in a very real way to other people, but doesn't understand why one would look into somebody else's eyes to get information, because he doesn't get any information that way. In fact, a lot of people with Asperger's say it's sort of it feels bad to them to look in someone else's eyes. We did a Q&A a few days ago after a screening, which one of the people in the audience had Asperger's, and somebody mentioned something about the eye contact thing, and he just said, "Well, I look at mouths because that's where the sound comes from." And people kind of laugh, but there's a certain, you know, unassailable logic to life in that way.
In the beginning of the movie, we don't, you know, Adam's diagnosis hasn't been articulated. We don't know what it is. And I wonder, could you share with us some of the tales, the visual details that you use to convey, you know, his life and his world?
Well, the movie starts out after his father's just died. So there's a scene with him at a funeral in which he has a somewhat odd or slightly seemingly vacant reaction to this funeral. And you find out a little bit later when he comes home, because there's a chart up on the refrigerator about for chores. And there's Adam's chores and Dad's chores, and he takes the pen and he crosses out dad, you know, from dad's chores and realizes that now he's going to have to do more of the chores. And that could be taken as sort of heartless in a way, but it's, as I've come to understand it, it's a much more sort of present tense sense of the world that many people with Asperger's have of rather than sort of dwelling on a feeling or on something that's happened in the past. It's actually, you know, the kind of the next thing, feel the sort of feeling realm is a very sort of awkward realm. So it's better to get on with it.
I mean, the heart of the story is his relationship with this woman, Beth, who is played by Rose Byrne. They meet because she happens to move into another apartment in his building, and he is struck by her. And when you were crafting this story, I'm wondering how you decided upon what kind of woman would be drawn to Adam. How did you decide what kind of character to write for Beth?
Well, I think that some of her outstanding characteristics are she's very curious. She has a really good sense of humor, which from what I understand is a sort of absolute must for people who are having relationships with people with that on the Asperger's with Asperger syndrome. She's also is sort of in a crisis in the sense that the way she's been brought up and the sort of idealized view that she's had of her family is in the process of crumbling. And she is in the process of realizing that things that she took for granted or believed about her family and her family's relationships weren't true. So I think she's in a space where honesty and fidelity are especially salient to her at the moment. So I think some of the things that Adam offers in terms of honesty and intelligence and the fact that he can be counted on are very attractive.
You know, there's a moment in early in the relationship where Adam reveals to Beth that he has this issue, this syndrome, Asperger's. And I'm sure that's something that you thought about when you were crafting the scripts. And it comes fairly early in the film, so we're not giving away much. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you decided he would reveal this to Beth.
Right. First of all, it does come a little later than I think you would ordinarily think to discover it in a film. I mean, I think it's about a third of the way through or whatever. And it was important to me that the audience kind of get to know Adam without necessarily putting a label on him. Of course, that's just for the first weekend of the movie, because now everybody who's going to it pretty much knows what it's about. But in terms of the experience of the film itself, he's not labeled for, you know, the first half hour or whatever. And that was kind of important to me, in that I did want people to be intrigued and sort of leaning forward and trying to figure it out, and then and get to know him a little bit as a person before you put a label on it, because the label tends to just become that. The person then becomes a label if you sort of learn about it too soon. And that's actually an issue in the Asperger's community too, about when to divulge your diagnosis to neurotypicals. But the other thing I wanted was for it to be truthful, in the sense that I think Adam would not, the character I know wouldn't divulge it until he needed to. And so I basically waited until Beth was almost out the door at a certain point, and so that he kind of had to tell her that to keep her in the room.
And what he had done was to say something kind of inappropriate at that point in their relationship about the fact that he was sexually attracted to her, and it put her off. And so he jumps in and says, wait a minute, there's a reason I said something like that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to play a clip from the film, and this is a point at the film in which it's right after Adam and Beth, the woman that he's in the relationship with, have had a fight. And Beth shows up and sort of as a peace gesture has brought him a box of chocolates.
I'm sorry. Some chocolate.
I'm not Forrest Gump, you know.
course not. I didn't even... Was that a joke? Are you joking?
I can't joke.
I'm sorry. I took it out on you. I'm just scared for my father. You can apologize too, you know.
Well, you said it was your fault.
And that's Hugh Dancy and Rose Byrne from the new film Adam, which is written and directed by our guest, Max Mayer. You know, you can hear in that scene that he's taking things so literally. He can't understand why he would apologize also, because she just declared that it was her fault. But the scene begins with him cracking that joke, and it kind of threw me because, you know, I was used to thinking of him as someone who is so literal, does not pick up subtext and inference in conversation. And yet there's this wonderful little ironic joke that he pulls out of, you know, out of the cinema and this gesture. Is this typical of folks with Asperger's? I wonder, is that...
Well, I think that that we supply a bunch of the irony, actually. I think that from Adam's standpoint, I mean, he is reminding Beth gently that he's not retarded. You know,
right.
I mean, that he doesn't have a cognitive impairment, you know, and he knows that he's you know, not, you know, coming down hard on her or anything, but he has a literal purpose, I think.
So he's not making a joke then, or is he?
yes, I think he's, he's, you know, he's tentatively hoping and that it's funny, that, you know, that she will both, that she'll get the message, and that he's doing it in a way that's light. But this is very far on in their relationship, and I think that in a way he's taking a big chance, because, you know, which he would never do with somebody he didn't know that well.
You know, the other interesting thing, I mean, you were saying that in some respects the difficulties with Asperger's are sort of a metaphor for the difficulties of people in relationships. You know, we all want to connect, and communicate, but it's hard and we struggle with it. The other thing that struck me here was the fact that Adam, you know, he just has no filters. I mean, he's tactlessly honest. He has no interest, for example, in her friend's baby pictures, and therefore kind of insults them. And
right.
It struck me that a lot of women who think that their guys are kind of tactless and insensitive and clueless probably look at this and looking at this thinking, gosh, I wonder if my boyfriend has Asperger's.
Yes, it's kind of wonderful how you hear sort of higher pitched laughs in the audience and lower pitched laughs in the audience, and they sort of take turns. In that clip that you showed, I think that a lot of men would identify with Adam saying, "Well, you said it was your fault. Why would I apologize?" That kind of makes sense to me as a man, and that's probably something I have to work on in my life. But and by the same token, the reverse is true, where he's, you know, where he says things that are obviously to neurotypicals inappropriate, but honest, and comes out as a bull in a china shop, or certainly provides more information than anybody wants fairly often.
You know, I wonder if, as this film, you know, gets attention, I mean, do you feel the presence of advocates for Asperger's out there, ready to either pounce on something in the film that you got wrong, or make you a champion for their cause? I mean, there are issues. I mean, there are public policy issues, like the difficulty
right.
of people with, you know, Asperger's getting needed services because they're not regarded as sufficiently mentally handicapped. I mean, are
right.
you ready to become
and
an
what
advocate?
Is a disability and all that?
Right.
I very much feel that. I didn't up until the last 3 weeks. We've been going sort of around the country on a bit of a junket and showing the movie all over the country. And some of those screenings have had large numbers of people with Asperger's. And at the beginning, certainly, my heart was always sort of in my mouth as soon as somebody stood up and said, well, I have Asperger's, partly because, you know, they have a right to criticize and they have the right to say this is, you know, this is accurate or representative or not or whatever, partly for that. And also because you know that you're going to get the straight dope, basically, because there isn't the same kind of filter or you know, they're not really invested in being charitable or you know, or assuaging my insecurities or whatever. But fortunately, I must say, it's the reaction has been unbelievably gratifying. People have seemed to be almost humblingly grateful that this movie is out, and they feel like it is an accurate representation, not of the entire community, because that's, you know, not possible, but it's an accurate representation of someone with Asperger's, of a unique human being with Asperger's, and also a positive representation. So that's been incredibly gratifying, and also a little bit, you know, sometimes I feel a little bit like a fraud, because, as I said, that's not why I made the movie. I made the movie sort of to talk about relationships and my own and other people's, and used Asperger's, wanting to be accurate about it. But if it has the byproduct of making the our neurotypical world a little bit more interested and compassionate and you know, and valuing of that community, that's a great thing.
So when you had these screenings and people with Asperger's rose and said things, what kind of things did you hear?
Well, there was one young woman who basically started a list of things that she liked about the movie, starting with the crane shot that started on the leaf and pulled focus to the van. So she was being, you know, very precise, and then, you know, went on with a list of maybe 10 or 12 more things that she really liked, both sort of large and small, and that was kind of impressive. Then there are the most sort of touching thing about those Q&As, I think, have to do with parents of children who have Asperger's, because I think the movie touches both on their fears and their hopes for their children's future, and their concern for sort of what happens when they're left on their own. So some people are extremely emotional about the film and feel like that the film does give them a certain hope about their children and moving on and forming other attachments in life, which is a realistic hope and not sort of just rosy and Hollywoodized or whatever. And then there are people with Asperger's who just are you know, just sort of frankly state that they think that it was well done, and they understand, they recognize themselves in the movie. And there's you can hear a lot of sort of laughter of recognition from those audiences.
Well, Max Meyer, we'll be waiting to see what you come up with next. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Well, it was a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Max Meyer wrote and directed the new film, Adam. You can download podcasts of our show at freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Joan Tui Westman, Sam Brigger, Jonathan Menhivar, John Myers, and John Sheehan. Mike Seeger, the singer, multi-instrumentalist, and folklorist, died Friday at the age of 75. The cause was blood cancer. Seeger, with his band the New Lost City Ramblers, was a major figure in the folk revival of the 50s and 60s. He was also the half-brother of Pete Seeger. We'll close with Mike Seeger playing and singing on his 2007 CD, Early Southern Guitar Styles. For Terry Gross, I'm Dave Davies.